You're listening to a podcast from the Media Motel. Coming up this week in episode 266. It's been a tough old week for Melania. Week? Look who she's married to. But the Trump bandwagon rolls on across America, and we explore the history of political plagiarism. Will the appointment of Big Sam lead the England football team into a new era of success? Maybe they can ask Iceland for a rematch. Yes, we have a Pokemon update, and we look into the etiquette of shopping. It's all coming right up after Corinne Bailey-Ray and Put Your Records On.
Three little birds sat on my window, and they told me I don't need to worry. Summer came like cinnamon, so sweet. Little girls double dutch on the concrete.
Hits all around the world in 2006, a lovely opener for this week, chosen by Juliet. From her debut album, Corinne Bailey-Ray, and Put Your Records On. Welcome to the Parish Council podcast, episode 266.
I know, it just keeps happening, doesn't it?
just the numbers keep growing. Brought to you by the Media Motel, I'm Terence Dackham, and also a hit all around the world... It's Juliet Harris.
Hello, thanks. Yeah, at least a semi-hit in Spain. I think that's the biggest we can develop that, I think.
Jules, in his book Outliers, the writer Malcolm Gladwell proposes that to achieve expertise in a topic, we need to practice for around 10,000 hours. The Beatles, in his book, were one of the great examples of where they practiced in the live setting in Pamburg for about 10,000 hours. There are, though, shortcuts, as Melania Trump showed this week.
Simply, oh, yes, didn't she?
Just copy somebody else's work. I, too, am a living example of the opposite of Malcolm Gladwell's theory. I gained one of my four A-levels by essentially undertaking no work at all. Now, when some people say, oh, they hand out degrees just for the students turning up these days... Well, there were shortcuts in the 70s, too. At Christmas, in my final year at college, one of my tutors said, in, I suppose, an unguarded moment, he said, oh, you know, some A-levels are easier than others. And to cut a long story short, that led me through his guidance. Don't you just have a free A-level? I thought, no. But anyway, this is what happened. I entered History of Art A-level in 1972. I didn't attend one class... I visited the National Gallery in London once in the week before the exam, and crucially, I read one book about the Renaissance period, and that enabled me. I learned phrases like tactile values and definitive marginalising of form, that sort of thing.
And these all sound like krautrock albums, don't they, these phrases?
They do, by Can or
Tangerine Dream. That's very much
the tactile values of Tangerine Dream. And anyway, I filled several pages of twaddle and boom, an A grade in History of Art A-level. Seriously.
Oh, wow.
So it's possible to achieve with the barest minimum of effort.
Now, I also think that several pages of twaddle, the Terence Dackham story, would sell out in airports across the world should you ever wish to put your experiences in an autobiography.
A gold embossed cover.
Like
Donald Trump has on all his books. And speaking of him, Melania Trump went one stage further. She didn't put any effort in, and one of her speechwriters didn't put in much more. Simply copy and pasting a speech from Michelle Obama from the 2008 Democrats convention. Does it matter, Jules? And also, can anything damage Mr. Trump?
Well, he's beginning to get a bit like Boris Johnson, isn't he? Where, yes. Although, having said that, I suspect we are seeing the undoing of Boris Johnson now. My theory the other week, by the way, that Theresa May was putting him in a position where he was probably going to fail, doesn't that seem to be correct at the moment? Wherever he goes, it all seems to go horribly wrong for Boris Johnson, getting booed in various places. Yes, I keep thinking something's going to stop Donald Trump, and it doesn't. At all, and actually this fits in quite well to your plagiarism thing. It's almost like we are living in a post-truth world, aren't we? We keep hearing this expression all the time at the moment, and it seems to get realer and realer. There was a Have I Got News For You have now diversified into putting things up on Twitter now, it would seem, as well as on the TV program. There's something on the lines of, you know, Melania Trump was outraged that she was accused of plagiarising Michelle Obama. As a strong black woman, she would never plagiarise Michelle Obama. So it's tricky, isn't it? My plagiarism, I mean, not well, yes, it was plagiarism. When I was at school, so this would have been, mid to late 90s, we were all told in music class that we had to write... each week we're given a different composer that we had to write a short piece about. That lovely phrase, only 90s kids will remember this. Well, of course, this was before the internet had really properly got seriously going, or at least to the point before it became so saturated and so normal just to Google stuff. I think Alta Vista and Ask Jeeves were the main search engines then. So we are going back some. There was something called... Microsoft Encarta, which some people might remember. It basically ended up being finished off by Wikipedia. It was prototype Wikipedia. It very much had a relationship to Wikipedia that CFAX has to the internet, if you see what I mean. Each week, and it got to the point where the teacher said, look, I'm fed up with reading 29 slightly altered versions of the Encarta and the Encarta article on Mozart. Is it possible that someone could at least look at the Encyclopedia Britannica instead, or something, you know, some other reference source? So you know, it's tricky. So having said that, we have very, you know, we were 12, 13 year olds. We didn't have a sort of snazzy mobile phones or computers back then necessarily. Melania Trump and her speechwriter are not in that position, are they? They're not dependent upon Encarta and whatever their dad's friend can lend them. In my case, my dad had a friend that had Encyclopedia Britannica, and I used to go round there. Those were the only resources we had. Melania Trump has a lot more than that, doesn't she, really? And it seems I mean, it was, to be fair, she isn't Donald Trump. She's obviously a relative of Donald Trump. But I agree. It's got to the point where the Donald Trump phenomenon seems to have gone beyond rational analysis, doesn't it, really? Everything seems beyond rational analysis nowadays. It's really a struggle to actually come up with anything to sell other than just sitting here blinking, really, because that's kind of how I feel about the whole thing. It'd be interesting to see. I still keep thinking, oh, you know, it's not going to be Trump. How can it be Trump? But people are increasingly starting to, I think people are working on the basis that it probably will be Trump, because everything else has madly happened this year. So why not this as well? Mm. And I mean, the speech that he made at the convention, I mean, they said that ironically, and I say they, I think it was a newspaper article, said that usually, for all that you may like or dislike about Mr. Trump, he does weirdly manage to ad-lib quite well. He's occasionally quite funny. He can come across as a sort of a likable everyman, which is a skill in itself, given how much money Donald Trump has. Mm. But in this instance, he read off a teleprompter, which he never, ever does. So he read off a teleprompter, which he just about managed to do, I think. But it robbed him of his kind of easy charm. Mm. And it was just this kind of horribly hectoring kind of bellowy speech. They played a little bit of it on their radio. We are gonna build a wall. It was really, really, really upsetting. But then having said that, we see that as, you know, we see it as being awful. Mm. But we're not over there, are we? We're not American. We're not parts of the Rust Belt, are we? As you've spoken about previously, we're not in this. A bit like we're jaw-dropped that some people voted to leave. Yet, you know, having been on my travels recently and been to various small northern towns, I totally get why people perhaps did now. So it's like you say, in any sane world, plagiarism would matter very much and it would be the end. But having said that, in a way, this, the last Tory, the coalition government and this Tory government seems to be the same. Hardly anybody ever resigns when stuff goes wrong. Jeremy Hunt is completely unstoppable, isn't he? And I mean, the man that hid behind a tree to avoid journalists has not felt the need to resign. I mean, Liam Fox resigned. He's now back in government. People, and I'm going to get on my high horse and have a bit of a whinge, the only people in the coalition and the Conservative government that seem to have resigned as ministers and then gone away, they're all women, aren't they?
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
It's the one the other week, Claire Perry, the rail minister, resigned. Mm. Okay. It's not clear whether she resigned or was pushed. To be fair, I think she had to go, really, given the absolute mess that Southern Rail and Govia seem to be in at the moment. I mean, that just no one seems to be able to do anything about that. But
yes, I think about the Trump speech. Over here, I think many of us don't realise it's crucial that you refer to the Rust Belt there. That's who he's got to appeal to. American politics is so polarised that so many states are so definitively Democrat or so definitively Republican that it doesn't matter what they say, they will remain as they are because it's a massive majority one way or the other. So it's just those key states in Middle America, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Iowa.
It's apparently neck and neck at the moment. When I was driving in, I think today he said, they had someone, I think it was James Naughty, at the convention, and he said that polling is suggesting that Ohio is pretty close at the moment. So actually, who knows, we may yet end up with President Trump. At
least we may do. I think it was 64 delegates in the last election in America. 64 delegates made all the difference out of all, you know, the millions of votes cast. And so, it's on a knife edge. But this rang all sorts of bells for me because it reminded me of you were 3 years old, I think, when this happened. Such antics has happened this week as Melania Trump. We're seeing this career derailing. The current vice president, talk about bouncing back, the current vice president, almost, what would this be, 30 years ago, Joe Biden found his own presidential ambitions. They were roadblocked after he borrowed Melania style, but in his case from the unlikely source of Neil Kinnock. Of all people, the British politician Neil Kinnock. We didn't have have the internet, of course, in 1987. But
no.
An on-the-ball reporter noticed that in May 1987, at the Welsh Labour Party conference, Mr. Kinnock said, "Why am I the first Kinnock in a thousand generations to go to university? Was it because our predecessors were thick, because they didn't have the talent, strength or endurance? Of course not. It was because there was no platform on which they could stand." Right. Yeah. 4 months later, Joe Biden speaking on his presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. Why is it that Joe Biden is the first in his family to go to university? Mm-hmm. Is it because our fathers and mothers weren't bright? It's because they didn't have a platform on which to stand. And within days, Joe Biden withdrew from the race to be president.
Oh, gosh.
What a difference. The world has changed so much in the intervening 30 years, as you allude to. Nobody resigns.
The post-fact world. I mean, and this is, you could talk for ages about how we've got here, and there was a fantastic article. I can't remember who wrote it, on The Guardian fairly recently. We have to try and dig it out and tweet it. That talks all about just that. And you know, is it the internet that's got us here, really? Because if you Google, you can find facts on the. I mean, anyone can put anything up on the internet, can't they? As a result of which, you can find facts to support any argument, can't you? And I'm putting facts in inverted commas here. Yeah. So like you say, I mean, that is slightly unbelievable that you know, but like you're saying, to veer off topic slightly in the terms of no one resigning. I mean, I occasionally, to cheer myself up if I've had a bad day at work, I read through the Back to Basics Wikipedia entry for the Tories, and I read through the list of people that resigned. 80% of those people wouldn't resign now. I mean, do you remember it was a complete crisis to the point where, you know, I remember my nan read the Mirror at the time, and it had the infamous House of Cards cover with the, you know, with everyone that had to resign. I mean, nowadays, you know, hardly anybody in that would resign. Though I think it's an indicator of how badly things are going for your government. If a chap that waves a pickaxe at motorway protesters is two-thirds down the article. So I suppose in a plus point, you know, I guess Melania Trump didn't wave a pickaxe at motorway protesters.
No.
That's probably pretty much the only good thing you could say about it, really, isn't it? But the idea that people don't resign anymore, I find really peculiar. I must admit, I find really weird.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we've learned that copying is an easy path, or the easiest path of all is just to turn up and bluff it, rather like your Microsoft Encarta and my History of Art A-level.
And indeed, this podcast this morning for me. Hello.
A sorry tale from Chesterfield, and can Big Sam save England? That's next, right after Porcupine Tree.
As the cheerless towns pass my window, I can see a washed out moon through the fog. And then a voice inside my head breaks the analog. Says, follow me down to the valley below. You know, moonlight is bleeding from out of your soul. I survived against the will of my twist. Please.
Favorite bands of all time. Stephen Wilson takes inspiration from so many of my other favorite artists: Beach Boys, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Todd Rundgren. I can't help adoring Porcupine Tree from their 2005 album Deadwing. That was Lazarus. Jules, before we discuss the charms of Sam Allardyce.
Yes, indeed. The pin-up that is Big Sam, yeah.
I'm sure you've already got the posters on your wall.
Yes, I've got a love heart-shaped photo frame with his face in it already, yeah.
I just wanted to give a brief mention to Chesterfield Football Club, who survive in the third tier of English football. I first saw this story in my Twitter feed during the week and kept tabs on it as the full tale emerged. Briefly, Chesterfield thought it would be a fine money-raising scheme if they ran a competition for fans. £10 to enter, and the winner wins a trip on Chesterfield's pre-season tour. Okay, you know. Now, with a small fan base, most fans at Chesterfield know almost everybody else. So when the club announced that a Surrey-based fan, James Higgins, they announced this week, had won the prize but had been too ill to travel to the pre-season tour. Thus, no photo of a grinning James in Hungary holding, you know, a club shirt. Suspicions were roused, and to cut the story even shorter, it turns out that only four people gave their £10 and entered the competition, and that, surprise, surprise, Chesterfield entirely fabricated the name of the winner, presumably to avoid the cost, a huge deficit to the club, of taking one of those four entrants to Hungary. And the club has apologised this week, but what a gulf exists between that heady private jet, dietitians, Dr. Dre headphones, Ferraris of the Premier League, and just about every other club in the Football League. And what a mess to get into.
It does seem ridiculous, doesn't it? Although Chesterfield have other problems at the moment as well, because a part of me would love these two, the lack of interest in their competition and this, to be connected, though I suspect that, you know, the world doesn't work in the same way as my feminist ideal head does. But they very recently signed Chet Evans, I think, much to disgust of at least some of their fans. So Chesterfield seem to be, if you're in that position where you know, you do end up signing a convicted rapist that has been shunned by you know, various other areas, other football clubs, then I wonder if Chesterfield are not in a great place at the moment anyway. And it feels a very far cry from their wonderful cup runs in the 90s and the FA Cup runs that then brought Kevin Davis to the world.
That whole world seems a very long way away, and charm. So Big Sam as England manager, is this an appointment, Jules, made 10 years later than it might have been? Or can Sam Allardyce lead us into a footballing world where we may actually have a chance of winning something?
Well, and we can thread this in again to David Cameron's recent resignation. David Cameron said to Tony Blair at his first ever, Tony Blair's last ever PMQs, David Cameron said he was the future once, and at the end of David Cameron's last ever PMQs, David Cameron said, "I was the future once." Well, apparently Sam Allardyce was the future once. About, I can still remember sitting in a pub watching whatever tournament it was in 2006, and I think it was the 2006 World Cup, and my friend Helen saying, "Oh, you know, Big Sam's meant to be our next manager," and us chortling even then, and now 10 years later, here he is. I don't dislike Big Sam. I'm going to say I think it's the appointment that England deserve. And by that, I mean that part of the... I mean, we've just lost to Iceland, haven't we, in a major tournament? Yeah. I mean, I think we need to stop pretending that we are a world superpower. I think we need to, in the football... Well, generally, but in the footballing world. And I think that we need to start... I think there needs to be a process of rebuilding that goes on. I think we need to stop expecting that, you know, people like Pep Guardiola are going to want to come in and manage England because they don't, do they? Who wants that job? So actually, someone like Big Sam, who does appear to clearly very much want the job, who is English, who probably knows most of those players, I don't think it's the worst idea ever. He might get England playing like England again, in that he might actually, you know, he's not going to shy away. Roy Hodgson always seemed to want to get England to play like one of the Italian Premier teams and not Serie A teams and not really get them anywhere. This is interesting. Sam Allardyce got some quotes here. He was ranting about... he'd been in late April. He was asked what he thought about the Football Association's latest brainwave of employing specialist in possession and out of possession coaches. Sam Allardyce says, laughing, "I think it sounds like a way to justify giving coaches a job. I think it means you're only qualified to drive an automatic and not a gear shift vehicle. I learned a lot about coaching in other sports when I was out in America." He played for Tampa Bay Rowdies in 1983. "And they do that in American football. But it's so static. It rarely runs for more than 6 seconds and it's all stop start. Our game is different. It's all about a coach's individual ability and intelligence levels." A lot of what Sam Allardyce says seems to make a lot of basic sense. We seem to be away from people like Roy Hodgson speaking in sort of gnomic riddles, really, talking about England's DNA and all that rubbish. I mean, Sam Allardyce does at least sound like a nuts and bolts man, and it will be interesting to see if he can sort of retool England along those lines of actually getting them playing fairly basic. I mean, I don't see why England don't play 4-4-2. I'm fed up with England trying to do things that aren't England. If you've got a style of football that's always been your sort of heritage that no one else does, why not do it? And if you can do it really, really well, why not do it? I mean, there are anti-Sam. How do you feel about this? There are some anti-Sam arguments that could be made.
I'm not anti-Sam. I suppose Sam Allardyce deserves his chance, but
he
seems a reasonable sort of fellow. It's hard to think of anyone to answer your question who one would pick ahead of him. My reservations are, I mean, you're quoting, and I think it's very apposite, that he's referring to his time at Tampa Bay Rowdies. It was before you were born. It was in 1983.
I know.
How irrelevant that is now. He did seem ahead of his time in a way when he was at Bolton and started using sports science technology and I think relaxation techniques. But that was back in the early 2000s. Former players have spoken about his decent man management skills, that's true. But it was well over 10 years ago when he was seen as the future. And
yes,
I do wonder
true.
If this, you know, disappointment, is it a decade late? The thing is, it's a poison chalice, whatever happens.
Yeah,
it'll
true.
Almost inevitably end in tears unless he resigns the day after we win the 2018 World Cup in Russia.
In which case, he can resign and, you know, we'll all buy Sam a drink, won't we?
Absolutely. I mean, even Alf Ramsey was sacked, you know, our only World Cup winning manager.
Yes.
But the thing that I think is going to be crucial to this, and this I think is the question for his immediate success of other, he'll need to make some big decisions in the coming months, that's for sure. And I just wonder, will he, like Hodgson, be in awe of Joe Hart, Wayne Rooney, Jack Wilshere, Raheem Sterling?
I don't think he will, actually. I think Big Sam does have a reputation for, you know, getting rid of things that aren't working anymore. I think we might be living in a different era to Hodgson, and I think you're absolutely right. There's a lot of living on past glories, ex-golden generation, quote-unquote, Deadwood, that needs clearing. If Sam can clear that, it will be interesting. If he has the bravery to clear that, then he could do something for England. I completely agree with you. And also, I know this always comes up about Big Sam, and I'm not necessarily, you know, sure of how relevant it is at international level. This will be crucial as well. When we did our... I know we had to reconfigure our predictions last season, didn't we, halfway through, because it was clear that we got it really completely wrong, and our view, our listeners continue to be extremely amused and amusing about that fact. But when we did our sort of slightly more sensible predictions... We were talking about whether or not Sunderland would be relegated. And I said no, because I think that Big Sam will find a way to keep them up, because he's never been relegated from the Premier League. Mm. And that record remains because Sunderland stayed up. So Sam seems to have a way of finding fight in players and getting the job done. But then there's a world of difference. And actually, this is where England have been so frustrating recently. Can we break this cycle of England just about doing enough to get through, as they did it, and then, you know, meeting disaster in people with people like Iceland? Why, you know, is it, can we break the cycle of England just, you know, muddling through and it all being all right? Sam's record suggests maybe we won't, because that's kind of what Sam does, isn't it, really? So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Yes, qualifying for the 2018 World Cup starts for European teams in September, so it's in fact only about 6 weeks away from when we're recording this. We're in a group with Slovakia, Scotland, Slovenia, Lithuania and Malta, but we just can't be confident of anything anymore.
Well, although we seem to be able to win easily in group stages, don't we? Then we get to major tournaments and it all goes horribly wrong. So
that's been the recent pattern, yeah.
Yeah, I tell you what would be interesting, Sam being kind of ahead, you know, ahead of his time. We talk about, you know, there being problems with the England players, you know, the headphone culture, as we always talk about. But maybe there's some element of sports psychology that could come into play here. And Sam seems like someone that might embrace that. I wonder what Steve Peters would have to say to this England team.
Mm. Yeah. I'm always interested to know how successful teams around the world do this. And I honestly have no idea whether France or Portugal employ sports psychologists and so on, or whether, you know, whether it would make any difference at all. And I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago in terms of Iceland and Wales. If you just say to the players, look, just turn up and give it your best shot.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
yeah.
Does all that analysis and all the psychology actually give you anything more than maybe a quarter of 1% of a margin of improvement? I don't know is the answer.
Interesting. Yeah.
A Pokemon update and the perils of shopping in the modern era. That's next after this gorgeous track from Elizabeth Fraser. Sometimes we describe someone or something as unique when it's anything but. However, unique seems entirely appropriate for lovely Elizabeth Fraser and her delicious cover of Chic's At Last I Am Free.
So much love for Elizabeth Fraser. Mm. I just think she's incredible. And again, someone that has become a bit of a cult figure. Someone that knows when not to over-egg it, doesn't she? We haven't had many box sets of Liz Fraser material and her doing the rounds of the chat shows, haven't we? That's not something that she ever seems to do. As a result of which, I'm always glad to hear from her. Whenever you hear Cocteau Twins or this Mortal Coil or anything, everything she's involved in is such good quality, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I love her voice. I love the sort of natural sort of accent and way that she sings. There's nothing sort of manufactured about Elizabeth Fraser.
Her occasional pioneering invention of apparently completely new words and languages as she sings as well is always
respected. I have to say, I much prefer Elizabeth Fraser when she's singing real words. I'm not a big fan of the kind of pretend
the
language
type stuff. Fair enough, Darren Zeno. It's our world and we can all take our place in it.
Last week, after you explained Pokemon Go to us
confused nation, yeah.
That's right. I found I was bumping into people playing it everywhere. Or to be accurate, they were bumping into me.
Yes, that's a better...
Yeah, last Sunday I was walking through Soho and I found myself dodging countless people. A lot of people were weaving along the pavements, Dean Street, wherever, staring at cartoon characters on their smartphones. Anyway, I had a moment of inspiration. I wanted to run this past you, see what you think.
Yes, I suspect I'm probably broadly pro, but carry on.
Well, I only get moments of inspiration about one every 10 years, so forgive me for bringing this in. Why doesn't someone develop a Pokemon-style game for other interests? And here's my idea: Beatles Pokemon. You have to walk around London or Liverpool, I suppose, and find the Beatles, capture them, as it says in the game. The rooftop gig in Savile Row, the zebra crossing in Abbey Road, the ill-advised boutique in Baker Street. Capture them all and you get a prize. I don't know, maybe a badge or a certificate, maybe a free month on Spotify, maybe a link to a YouTube clip or something. And that would widen out the appeal to many people who are not so quite entranced by the Pokemon characters. And just a quick couple of other examples, maybe a Bowie Pokemon Go, find the Ziggy album cover location
yes,
and so on.
Yes, I really like this. This really kind of work. You could also do your Clash, couldn't you? And the punk.
You could. Take it out of London, you could do Manchester, you know, Factory Records, the Hacienda, versions of Bernard Sumner.
And what's it, Salford Lads Club with the Smiths and all of that sort of thing. No, I agree. This is excellent. And also sort of we could do South Wales and Manic Street Preachers,
exactly.
And all the sort of Welsh bands. I think we must make some sort of way that you post this podcast to yourself and therefore copyright this suggestion, because I think this sounds like an absolutely excellent idea. And if there are any app type, if there are magical app development wizards listening, you need to get in touch with Terence, because we've got to make this happen. I think that's a superlative idea.
Hastings, you know, Juliet's gigs over the years, different locations.
Absolutely, yes. The infamous Dragon Bar in Hastings. Yeah, I'm not quite sure I've got the right level of cachet, but God bless you, Terence, that I might have.
Jules, I know why high streets are failing and everyone is shopping online, and I've got the ultimate.
Full of truth this week, aren't you? I'm enjoying this enormously.
Absolutely full of it, some might say. Yes.
Lol, yes.
We all know that in most urban shopping centres you have to queue to get into the car park, fight someone barefisted to get a parking space, and then on your return you walk 3 extra miles to find a parking pay machine that's working but doesn't give you any change, and then you queue to get out of the car park. We all know this. But this...
And people wonder why my Michael Douglas lost it and falling down,
yes,
don't they?
Right, I often feel like that. But this week I found a new, fresh hell in the middle of all this process, the actual shopping bit. I took a older relative to buy a pair of shoes this week. So in we go into
That's already quite a stressful scenario.
It already is. You don't know the half of it. But in we go into her favourite shoe shop in Kingston upon Thames.
Wow.
And we go into the shop, which I won't name. I neither wish to give them publicity, nor do I wish to be sued. But anyway, no assistants look at you when you walk in, okay? Nobody makes any form of contact, eye contact, anything. Because, Jules, the assistants are all wearing headsets with microphones, like Chris Kamara talking to Jeff Stelling.
That's unbelievable, Terence. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Or Beyonce on stage at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. Mm. Now, when you find a pair of shoes, this is what happens in this countrywide, nationwide chain of shops. You approach the headset people, and they yell into their microphones. They a pair of black court shoes, size 3, serial ZX43187YKZ, to the front of the shop now. And some poor young thing then approaches. They appear 5 minutes later, hands you the shoes. You get no help or assistance again. You try the shoes on. If you want to buy them, you approach the headset people again, who now produce a card-reading machine from a belt around their trousers.
Oh, gosh.
You pay a fortune. You're handed the shoes in a box, and before you know it, you're back on the packed streets of Kingston. It's fast food style for shoes. It's the end of civilization, Jules.
That does not sound, like I say, yeah, that's unbelievable, Terence, as what's-his-name would put it. Yeah, that does seem very dispiriting, doesn't it, really? The whole experience. I had an experience. I changed job, weirdly. I've been in my current job almost 3 years, and I started at the end of August about 3 years ago. And so I went to, and I suspect this might be the same nationwide chain or shoe shops, because I wanted to buy a pair of tan brogues to wear to my new job. So
very stylish, if I may say.
A strange experience then, where they still did have assistance then, because unfortunately, it was around the same time of year that children were going back to school and therefore having to buy new shoes. And this, I'll never forget this young female assistant chuckling, because she walked up to me to bring me the shoes and laughed as she saw me trying on a pair of shoes with various small children all sat all around me. And she said it was a bit like Gulliver's Travels. I was about 4 foot taller than everybody else around me trying to try on these shoes. But it does sadden me, actually. I mean, having said that, though, I'm going to slightly counterpoint this on the basis that there is nothing more irritating when you are browsing in a shop and people keep coming up to you asking you if they can help you, when actually I just want to be left alone, probably to not buy something and then slink off. And I suspect that approach is to stop me from doing just that. So I do find it quite irritating when I'm constantly harassed by overzealous shop assistants. Having said that, wouldn't it be nice to talk to a person?
I have to say, I'm a massive contradictions, though, because I too, I don't
not
want
very
that.
Keen on no, people generally, are you? Famously, you hate that.
Misanthropist, that's me. I know. I really
and cricket picnics as well, famously. But that's another.
Absolutely.
That's another issue.
I really don't want anybody coming up to me with the old, you know, oh, can I help you today? With that sort of sickly, false grin.
Yeah,
that,
you don't want people
I don't
in
want
headsets,
that.
Terence.
I don't want people in headsets. I don't want people coming up to me at all. All I want is a discreet presence, so that if I then do require help, they give me all the help I need, but without me telling them what I need. They're supposed to sort of basically just read my mind.
You essentially want the world, don't you? What you want is shop assistants that are basically like bagpuss, that you can take them out of the box and use them, and then you can put them back in the box and they go to sleep and the windmill goes away. Yeah, well, it seems reasonable and unreasonable at the same time, which I suppose kind of sums it up, really, doesn't it? I suppose, like you, I want people that are helpful but not too helpful. I don't know. It does feel like people shouting about court shoes in headsets is slightly the end of days, I must admit. It would have been better they'd all broken out into a dance routine. That would have at least given the headsets some kind of purpose, I feel.
Oh, yes, like they do in places like TGI Fridays.
Yes,
they all do a little dance.
And also the idea that those headsets make me think of people like Britney Spears performing on stage. That wearing a headset enables you, of course, to dance in a way that holding a microphone does not.
That's all I could think of was freezing cold looking fellows on Sky Sports News during the winter, muffled up and saying, Jeff, I can't quite hear you, but Portsmouth have just equalised against Mansfield. You know, that's what it was.
Well, they're also good for standing in car parks day, otherwise known as Transfer Deadline Day, aren't they? Standing outside Port Vale's ground going, well, we understand understand there might be someone moving on loan from Manchester United's youth team, looking like, you know, they got everything they'd ever wanted when they wanted to be a sports journalist. Yet somehow this was only it.
We're going to hell in a handcart full of shoes and brogues, Jules. That's the reality of it.
And headsets.
You can contact us if you wish. The easiest way is through social media and Twitter.
Why not tease us about? Are we going to dare to do predictions?
Oh, I think we will. I think we'll have to do pre-season.
Our public demands it.
Premiership predictions. Yes, we'll do. I guess we'll do who's going to win it, who's going to get relegated, and first manager to be sacked. That's always a good one.
What about Sam Allardyce?
Yes. Oh God, that would be terrible, wouldn't it? The first game, we lose 7-0 to Malta, and he resigns on the 4th of September or something.
I get the impression that Sam wouldn't read from a pre-prepared statement. You would get probably fairly good value copy from Sam, so.
And quite fruity language, no doubt, as well.
Yes,
I imagine.
Indeed. At least twitchy Roy Hodgson is gone, and we will get someone that actually goes for it now. I hope. And if Big Sam doesn't go for it, maybe it's that job that just turns people into complete hollow shells.
Oh, that would be sad to see. Jules, we referred about earlier about your appearances around the southern area.
Yes, indeed.
Any coming up this week?
Yeah, this week, depending upon when people listen to this, but we're recording this on the morning of Saturday, the 23rd of July. Beatwave Festival is happening in Hastings this weekend. Various bands playing at the Albion Pub. It's all free, so you can. The weather's nice. Why not pop down and see some bands? We spoke about. We played Ye Nuns, didn't we, a few weeks ago? They are playing this evening. Well, this afternoon actually, about 6:30, I think. And so there are various DJs appearing all weekend, and I am appearing at the end on Sunday afternoon. So if you want to see me spinning a few discs, I'll be appearing after the Fusiliers, I think, at about 6:00 on Sunday afternoon.
You're the headline act, as we said last week.
Yeah, and I'm appearing under an alias as well. Ooh. Because all of the DJs have been told we can't use our real names, we have to use snazzy aliases. So I am Velocity Girl for these purposes. And apparently, I was speaking to a friend of mine last night. His friend, he sent her the link in Facebook to all of the things, and she thought that Velocity Girl was in fact the 90s rock act that had reformed. And unfortunately, he had to disavow her of that and break the news that it was just me. So I'll be doing that on Sunday evening. Other than that, no Saturday social this week. It's about next week. Doing Indie Wonderland on the radio next week from 8 until 10 on Wednesday evening. BarricadeRadio.com. Tunes, chat, all sorts of things, really, is what's going to happen next week. Probably, I suspect next week will be an Indie Tracks special. There's a festival called Indie Tracks that takes place. I've always wanted to go to this because it involves steam trains, real ale and indie bands up in an Ashbourne, I think.
A heady combination.
Doesn't that sound wonderful? So it will be we'll play lots of the bands that are playing this year because it's next weekend. So that's the Indie Tracks special next week.
Massive thanks to Rona.
Yes, by the way, as ever, enormous thanks up there to our still just about friends in Scotland.
Yes, that's right. Yes, thanks as deep as Loch Lomond to you all and everybody north of the border. And thanks to you for listening wherever you are. We're back next week. Our closing track, Jules, is this in the same vein as that Herb Alpert track you picked a few weeks ago?
Thought I'd have picked this in a million years.
Exactly.
Yes, I do rather like this. And again, my partner, my DJ with Letty, she introduced this to me fairly recently on New Year's Eve, funnily enough. So this is the Spotniks. It's a 50s, 60s thing. And I believe I'm reliably informed this is Halvor Miller.
You have been listening to a DACA Media production.
Barack and I were raised with so many of the same values. Like, you work hard for what you want in life. That your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're gonna do.
My parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life. That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise.